Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc. Troy Foundry Theater and Diecast of Philadelphia are teaming up to create a new immersive theatrical experience inspired by classic horror stories from the Victorian era. Yellow will take place at the Trojan Hotel in Troy, New York. It upends the traditional haunted house and invites audiences to walk through interwoven tales of dread and terror. It will be performed October 30th and 31st and November 1st, 2nd, 7th, 8th, and 9th. We are joined by Troy Foundry Theater Artistic Director David Gerard, Troy Foundry Theater Associate Artistic Director Ethan Botwick, and Diecast Co-Founder and Director of Yellow, Brenna Geffers. Welcome. Thank you guys for being here.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks for having us.
Remind us briefly about Troy Foundry Theater and Diecast's previous collaboration. So we can, I know they're not the same, but we can use that as a kind of jumping off point for the new one.
Well, our first collaboration with Brenna would be a piece called La Ronde that she had developed originally in Philly and then brought us up to us June of 2018. It was such a success and we had such a great time working with Brenna. we decided to partner with her and her company, Diecast, on a production called Prohibition Project, Ilium Was, which we did a lot of research on Troy's history during Prohibition and then a lot of group writing directed by Brenna to sort of create an immersive experience. And in that piece, we were in the bowels of a collar factory, but we also went to a lot of different places. And that was done at the Collar Works Art Gallery, which we developed a real great relationship with them. And subsequently, we were invited by Collar Works through the Elizabeth F. Murray Foundation to do a workshop at their art farm, which is where Yellow started to develop.
Okay, so tell us what you can tell us about Yellow.
Well, it started out as an exploration on horror at large. So we looked at a couple different types of horror writers and horror stories and horror tropes. And the one that became the most interesting to us is what's called cosmic horror, or sort of seeing the unseeable, and what that meant in terms of creating a theatrical experience of something that was ultimately unseeable. So kind of following that curiosity, we read a lot of Lovecraft stories and a couple of other writers of the time, although Lovecraft kind of emerged as the leading theme that we explored. So reading some stories, reading his letters, reading about his life, and sort of paralleling them in with sort of modern concerns and modern dreads. And that's how the piece started to emerge.
What was your familiarity with horror or cosmic horror before you started working on this?
I had read Lovecraft when I was younger, like probably, I don't know, when people read Lovecraft when you're like a late teenager, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But so I was familiar with his work and also with sort of his problematic legacy. So looking at that body of work as an adult was really, really interesting to sort of see the things that were really beautiful about his imagination and awful and terrible about his imagination. I used to watch a lot of horror movies, but not so much anymore.
Why do you think you stopped?
I don't know. I think I watched my limit. Like, okay. If everyone gets an amount of horror movies they can watch in a lifetime, I used mine up all at
peak.
Once.
Yeah.
Yes.
How many people work on putting this together? And that's probably starting like conceptually, how many people come in and work on it? And then when are roles created and people cast, et cetera? Tell me more about putting it up. Yeah, I bet. It seems like it would have to be.
Yeah. It started with at Art Farm, I believe. How many hours?
Well, they started exploring this in Texas.
That's true. Yeah.
Diecast did, right?
Yeah, we went down to Texas Tech and worked with their new play development festival down there called the Wild Winds, which was really great. So we worked with artists from Texas to start building it.
Mm-hmm.
So there were five of those actors and artists who were part of that process, and two Diecast actors and myself and the co-founder, Tom Weaver. So that started there, and they knew they would never be in the show, but things that they created, pieces, elements, visual moments, pieces of writing are still inside the piece. So it's a lot of people had their creative hands on the piece.
And as you put up what will be in Troy,
mm-hmm.
how does that start to happen?
Well, like Brenna said, it did involve a lot of people. I'm going to guesstimate this piece has been developed over 4 to 5 states, including North Carolina, Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. Texas, New York. I feel like I'm forgetting a state somewhere there, mm-hmm. 4 to 5 states, and probably involves about 30 actors, give or take. Some of them are grad students, some of them were undergrad, some of them were professional actors, and other theater makers, non-actors, that are involved as well. So that's sort of the basis. It sort of starts from there. Brenna is collecting data. And now this piece involves half the cast are company members for Troy Thavandi Theater. Mm-hmm. The other half are actors from DieCast Philly. And I think there's 11 of us. There are 11 actors mm-hmm. in this piece. So we're still, like this week, all the actors show up en masse and we start to piece it together in the space. And the space that we're working in, which is the old Trojan Hotel, mm-hmm. really is a character in this play. A lot of our work, and we do get this from, this is something that DieCast is sort of inspired in Troy Foundry's work, of letting the piece, or letting the space define what the piece is going to be, that it's intrinsically part of the experience because it is immersive, but actually that the space that we work in and out of really is part of the story, really is a character in the story in many respects.
Is what the actors have to do completely scripted, or is there room for improvisation since it is an immersive and moving theater piece where each audience member's experience will be different?
It's fully scripted.
Okay. But there's not one playwright, though. It's this collaboration that creates it.
That's right. We call it the collective creation process. So multiple actors have written for a single characters. So there are only like two characters that have only one writer on them.
Okay. Ethan, tell me about your involvement, your experience in the piece.
Captain. We call him House Captain.
Yeah, no, my introduction to Yellow started at the Art Farm up in Granville, New York. That was in August. And we used that time to begin building a new physical vocabulary and breath vocabulary that the audience will see in this piece. It was.
I'm going to interrupt you ask you to explain for non-thespian what that means, a movement vocabulary and a breath vocabulary.
Sure. So, I mean, DieCast has introduced to Troy Foundry Theater a kind of vocabulary of movement and breath, things that you can do with your breath to create kinds of different soundscapes and affect different feelings. And so at Art Farm, we began to explore some new breaths that we had not quite used, but DieCast had implemented in prior shows. So we began to play with that and seeing how we could apply them to the idea of cosmic horror and what could we make horrific with sound and movement. And I think we have found some pretty scary things.
Yeah.
Good. That being the goal, that is good. Tell me more about what the audience will, what you can, and you know, obviously there's like secrets and surprises, but tell me more about what you can tell me or are willing to tell me about the audience will experience when they come to the Trojan Hotel.
It's interesting that you say secrets because I tend to, especially when I'm working with Brenna, I just look over at Brenna because I'm not exactly sure what I can always say. And especially in this piece, I was used as a device in Prohibition Project, so my appearance in it was very brief.
Okay.
And this is the first time that I'm, really the first time that I'm acting with my company. I'm usually serving in the capacity of artistic director or as a director. So this is the first time I'm really kind of like thrown into a piece. So part of the experience, especially with immersive theater,
right.
is the not knowing.
Yes, of course.
It's like what's really important. So I'm gonna defer to Brenna.
Well, I think the audience can imagine that they'll come in at night and they will walk into a space where they can grab a glass of wine or some spiked cider and listen to some old music and sit on a velvet couch until the show begins. And once the show begins, they can expect to be told a bit of a ghost story that's about existential dread and sort of the state of being alone in the universe. So it's no one's going to pop out and say boo at you. There's
right.
no jump scares.
Okay.
There's no gore. There's no trauma inside of it. It's really sort of a philosophical horror show. I hope that doesn't sound super dorky, but it's a
I don't think so. Good. Ethan, what is it, and David, how is performing in something like this different than performing in a regular audience is seated in front of you, proscenium, et cetera.
Yeah, so. It requires a whole new level of focus that I had not encountered before doing this kind of work. As an actor, you know, I went through my training, and there are things I'm always looking at and babysitting as in rehearsal and in performance. But in this style of performance, I have to know and trust that those things are there because I have no time to really pay attention to those kinds of things. There's so many moving parts. There's so much listening we have to do and really work together. I mean, as 11 people in separate rooms, we all have to know exactly where we are at all times and to how to traverse that, and then throw an audience in there that changes traffic patterns every night.
But it does sound like it requires a lot of different muscles than a normal performance. I shouldn't say normal, but you know what I mean? Traditional.
For me, again, I feel rather new to this because I'm usually the producer when it comes to working with Brenna and working with DieCast. So it does feel a little cinematic. It's certainly 360 degrees, mm-hmm. which is really different. But there's also the proximity. The audience is so close. So they're going to pick up on things that normally in a proscenium stage, you're just not going to. You know, it's difficult in a proscenium stage to have a subtle moment. Not that it's impossible, but it's difficult. Where this feels a little bit like film acting in a lot of ways, that you have the luxury of not working. I mean, no actor should ever be working too hard, nor should they be thinking. You know, if I had a grad teacher, director who's a colleague of both Brenna's and mine at Temple University, who said if acting were thinking, it'd be called thinking, right? You know, it's about doing and less thinking. And I think the luxury of this kind of work, because the audience is right there, is like Ethan said, you don't really have time. I don't want to make it sound like it's easier, but it's oddly, there's an odd comfortability to it. You feel, I guess, less on display because you're just so present with the audience there. And yeah, I think it's the don't work so hard, you know? I think that's a note that, I know that that's a note that I'll probably get from Brenna as we rehearse through this week of, you know, less, maybe a little bit more here, maybe a little bit more, less, you know? But not necessarily using adjectives, using transitive verbs, but which is important. But I there's a certain kind of cinematic quality to it that I think is really, as an actor, I think is kind of wonderful in a way.
How early in the process of creating the piece did you know you would be granted use of the Trojan Hotel?
When did that happen?
Pretty early for this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had the thought of exploring, like while we were still exploring what kind of horror we were interested, the Trojan Hotel became the place.
Yeah.
So as David mentioned, the location and venue and space of the piece really shapes and informs what the piece actually is. So it's kind of important that we know what it is pretty early.
Right.
Sounds like it would
Which is not always the case, especially with a site-specific theater company.
Right.
Who's, you know, we're actually at our 2-year anniversary. So we haven't been around for very long, but we've produced an incredible amount of work, which mm-hmm. is really great, which is really wonderful. We have an incredible company. And we're all friends. We all love hanging out together. I think that helps us as performers to sort of know one another that well. So we don't always have the luxury of finding a space early. So it's that relationship with one another is really super important so that when we can get into a space, we can work rather quickly. We've had a little bit of luxury of finding this space a little earlier than some of our other spaces. And the location, I think, knocking on wood, is the best location we've ever had because where it is in Troy. And it truly is one of those old buildings in Troy that you walk into and you're sort of like, my God, I can't believe
how
this
has this
is here.
Yeah, how has this been here and I've never been inside?
Yeah.
It looks.
The walls are just so beautiful in the way that they're sort of decayed in moments and just really stunning.
Yeah, it's half Victorian, half dilapidated, half magic, half creepy. That's a lot of halves, but
yeah,
know.
That adds up to a few, but gotcha.
Yeah.
Yellow, Troy Foundry Theater's new commission with DieCast of Philadelphia will run October 30th through November 9th at the Trojan Hotel in Troy, New York. TroyFoundryTheater.com for more information, and that link will be posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. David Gerard, Ethan Botwick, and Brenna Geffers, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.